Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the Responsible Day for the 23rd of Nisan. We start with gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hochhauser, for helping us upload these shiurim and make them available to you. Today we're going to see two short shivot of the Tzitzil Yezer from the 23rd of Nisan. The first one is from Tzitzil Yezer, Chelik Yud Dalet, number 14, volume 14, Simon Nun Dalet, response number 54. And it's about the interesting question of how we handle the seventh day of Pesach when it's on a Friday, because there are certain halachot that change into the eighth day of Pesach, or for some people and for some customs, when the question is, what are you allowed to do about that? So the question that was asked, to which he responded on the 23rd of Nisan of Tavshin Lamed Chet of 1978, was, can you use non-shmura matzah for your Erev Tavshilin, if you're a person who only eats Shmura Matzah? Let's make sure that we understand what that means. There's two kinds of matzah that's kosher to Pesach, but is acceptable for Pesach use. One kind of matzah is matzah that you watched it and you made sure it didn't become chametz from the time that it was, I'm pretty sure, ground into flour. You make sure that flour never had contact with water, such that it couldn't have leavened, and then whenever the water was put on, you made sure that within 18 minutes, you made sure that you baked it, and all the things that we do to make sure that our matzah is kosher to Pesach. That's one kind, but a higher level of care with matzah is watching it from shat ketzira, from watching it from the time that it is cut. So that's, even though the wheat has not yet been made into flour, so theoretically you'd say that it could never become leaven, because it's not even flour to become leaven. The extra, and it's learned in the Gemara from Psukim, from Ushmartem and Matzot, that you watch it, is that you watch it even from, because there was some worry that if you soak wheat, just even unprocessed wheat, if you soak it, there was some worry that it could already start the leavening process. How that works scientifically, I'm not getting into, but that's the issue. So you have two kinds of wheat, of matzah. You have what we call shmura matzah. That's what we use for the mitzvah of Pesach night. We all assume that that is the preferable matzah to be used for Pesach night. You use shmura matzah, that's shmura mishat ketzira. And then you have regular kosher Pesach matzah. There are some people who, as a practice and an extra stringency, would make sure you use shmura matzah all of Pesach. Now, when a holiday is on a Friday, so in Israel, remember, there are only one-day holidays. In America, or outside of Israel, Erev Tavshilin is usually done on a Wednesday. It'll be for situations where the holiday is going to be Thursday, Friday, right? So you have that often, three-day on, that's what they're called. I don't know if everybody calls it that. I've always tried to call it that, but you have a three-day yontif, so you're not really allowed to cook from a holiday into Shabbat, because then the holiday is praying for Shabbat, and that's inappropriate for the holiday to be praying for Shabbat. So in a whole halachic discussion that we don't have to get into right now, what you're allowed to do is on Wednesday, and some of this will come up at the tshuva, on Wednesday, you would say, you would put aside two pieces of food, let's say, often it's a matzah and an egg, let's say, but really, it's two pieces of food. There's a whole discussion about what kinds of food qualify. But as long as it's two kinds of foods, you put them away and you say, this Erev allows us to cook for Shabbat from Friday. Now, in a non-Israel place, that is actually usually particularly easy, because there's a whole question about whether the 2 days of Yontif both count as full Yontif or not, or whether there's a doubt. And if there's a doubt, then theoretically, if only Thursday's Yontif, Friday you didn't even really need the Erev. And if Friday's Yontif, you set the Erev on Wednesday. So, whole discussion. But let's suppose in Israel, which is where the question comes up, you have a holiday on a Friday, and you want to be able to go for Yontif, so you can still use an Erev Tavshilin. And the same thing, on the Thursday, you would set aside an Erev, you'd say, with this Erev, I'm allowed to cook for Shabbos. And however that works. It works, fundamentally, it works that we think it makes it like you're continuing a process you started from before Yontif, and that seems to be allowed for reasons that we can get into right here, having to do with the laws of Hachana, what counts as Hachana, what doesn't count as Hachana. We'll get into some of them here, but not most of them. Just to clarify, Hachana means preparation. What counts as preparation from Shabbos Yontif, what doesn't count, and all those kinds of things. So, here's the question. On the eighth day, I'm sorry, in Israel, the next day isn't the eighth day, it is Shabbos, right? It's just a regular day, because you only have one day of holiday. So when the seventh day is on a Friday, the next day isn't Pesach, and therefore, you would be allowed to eat matzah. Even this guy would be allowed to eat matzah that's not shmura, that's not the special kind of shmura matzah that's prepared especially for Pesach. And so the question is, can use that for an Eruv Tavshilin, for the bread part of his Eruv Tavshilin. So the question, underlying the question is, since I can't use it today in my custom, in my practice, maybe it doesn't count for me as food today, and therefore I can't use it. And then the question would be, well, it'll count for food tomorrow. So the question that Siddur is going to focus on is, so when the Eruv is supposed to take effect, and the Eruv is assumed to take effect, Bein HaShmashot, let's remember, is this time after Shkia, after the sun sets, and before the stars come out, which is this literally twilight time in Halakha, and it depends how you talk about it. I remember when I was growing up, people used to quote Rabbi Soloveitchik, who would say that it's like a separate time in Halakha. It's not the previous day, it's not the next day, it's not both, it's not either, it's its own separate individual time. But that has important ramifications, because this Eruv is supposed to qualify for the next day as food, and yet from the previous day, it's not food. Now the question is, what's called Migo de Katsai Ben HaShmashot Yikatsai de Kulei Yom. During Ben HaShmashot, this man could not make use of it because it's still somewhat the previous day and he doesn't eat non-Shmur Matzah on Pesach. So that's the question. So now, all that being set up, since there starts on his answer, Rabbi Akiva Eger, he says, in Drush V'Chidush Ma'aracha 7 and the 7th discussion in Drush V'Chidush, Rabbi Akiva Eger wrote a couple of things in his life. One of them was he wrote Tshuvot, he wrote Responsa. He wrote a couple of brief commentaries on, by brief I mean he raises questions, but with extreme brevity, on Shulchan Aruch and on Mishnah as well. And he has a much longer sefer called Drush V'Chidush, where he builds sort of big discussions of broad issues. So there, in the 7th Maracha, tells us the Tzitzit Eliezer, that the Rav Akiva Eger held on the last day of Pesach, when it was on Shabbat. So remember, he's living outside of Israel, so for him, the last day of Pesach means the 8th day of Pesach. It's very parallel to this Israeli situation, and the 8th day of Pesach was treated by many people in a more lenient way for some of these halachot as well, for some of these customs. So he said, Erev Shabbat, you could leave in the oven a pashtida b'tzimukim d'noagil v'achol b'yom tov acharon. So pashtida b'tzimukim is like it's a baked dough dish. Right, so let's say you're going to use matzah meal or whatever, but it's a baked dough dish with raisins in it. The custom seems to have been not to have used it on Pesach, not to use raisins at all on Pesach, because they had some worry about the raisins on Pesach, I think that's what it means, or dried prunes, dried grapes, something like that. But on the 8th day, people had the custom to eat it. So when the 8th day is, Wednesday, if it's possible for it to be a Wednesday, I can't remember right now which. When the 8th day is a Wednesday, I actually think it can't be a Wednesday. When the 8th day is a Tuesday, let's say. When the 8th day is a Tuesday, so you can just bake it on that day and then you don't have a problem. Let's say the 8th day is a Shabbos. You want to have it, you're always so used to it. It's a special 8th day of Pesach treat. You want to have it so you can bake it on the 7th day. On the 7th day, it's usher, it's prohibited to you. Your custom is not to eat such things on the 7th day, and therefore, how can you be doing that? So he said, and so often, so one of the ways that we justify cooking from the one day to the other is when the 8th day is Shabbos, but this sort of underlies the Eruv as well, the Eruv Tavshilin. Actually, there's two problems. One is they don't write the problem of Hachana, of preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat. And then there's a Durabanan problem, which the Eruv takes care of. But the don't write the problem, the biblical problem, the Eruv can't take care of because Chazal don't want to uproot. It's not that they can't do it, but they don't choose to uproot, in this case, completely uproot the biblical prohibition. Therefore, the reasoning of the Gemara seems to be that we say, Hoel de'id mikloi le'orachim. That theoretically, when I'm cooking on Friday, which is a Yom Tov for Shabbat, I'm theoretically not really cooking for Shabbat, at least at a Torah level. I'm cooking for Shabbat, but really because guests might come later today. Now that guests might come later today is something that we could talk about some other time, because it's not meant so much as a practical issue that guests might come, because you can have people who have never had guests on, Friday afternoon ever, and yet this halacha would apply. So it's a halachic reasoning that allows us to say that this doesn't qualify as a chana. That's a discussion for another time. But In the case of dough with raisins in it, you couldn't say that. Why couldn't you say that? Because the guests themselves would not eat it as well, because they don't eat it because the custom is not to eat these raisins on Pesach. So you don't have anybody out there. So how could I? So forget what the Erev is for a second. We'll get back to the Erev in a little bit, but forget that. How can I cook on Friday this stuff that nobody's allowed to eat? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, you know what? You're allowed to because Cho'il Sheyikla Chole She'ein Bo Sakana V'yochlenu Beheter. He says, we have two categories of ill people in halacha. There are people who are ill, and they're ill at danger to their lives, so that lots and lots of halacha get uprooted for them, but that's not so common, and that's not necessarily a relevant issue. But you have people who are ill with no threat to their lives, but they're ill, and halacha adjusts itself to that as well. One way that halacha adjusts itself to such ill people is that they would be allowed to eat. There's the custom of not eating these raisins. You know, I don't remember not eating raisins on Pesach, so maybe I'm just not remembering correctly, but the custom of not eating raisins doesn't apply, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, to people who are ill at a level, even if they're ill, so somebody's got the flu, so we don't have any real worries. The flu can be deadly, so maybe not the best example, but let's assume that it's a flu and nobody thinks that it's a problem. They think the person's going to be ill, sadly, for 2, 3, 4 days. It'll be uncomfortable and painful. Halacha adjusts itself to such people and allows some things for such people that we don't allow for other people, right? An example that comes to my mind is that in many cases on Shabbos, when we're not allowed to ask non-Jews to do things for us, if you have a cholish, ein bo sakana, if you have somebody who's ill, but with no danger to their lives, but they're ill, we are allowed to ask a non-Jew to do more things for them than we would ask them to do for ourselves. So here too, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, such an ill person would be allowed to eat such a dough with raisins in it. Therefore, here's the radical part of the claim, or the novel is a much better word, the novel, the innovative part of the claim. He says, therefore, that can qualify as the ho-ill, as the, I'm not really cooking for Shabbos, I'm sort of theoretically cooking for today as well, even though I'm cooking an item that's not permissible to be eaten. Tizli Ezra says, but implicit in what Rabbi Akiva Eiger says is that you don't think to yourself, well, the raisins were not permitted to me, to regular people, Friday afternoon, Ben Hashmashot, in that time between the sunset and the stars coming out, and therefore it must also be prohibited the next day. Right, that's what our problem was. How can I use the non-shmur matzah for an Erev Tavshilin? The Erev Tavshilin needs to take effect Friday afternoon between Ben Hashmashot. But Friday afternoon, Ben Hashmashot, I'm not allowed to eat the shmur matzah because my custom is not to eat the non-shmur matzah because my custom is to not eat non-shmur matzah on Pesach. How can I then let it be the backbone of an Erev that's purpose is to say these are foods that I was already prepared for before Shabbos, and therefore it was all part of the process, and that, but I wasn't allowed to. That's where Rabbi Akiva Eiger is helping us out, because Rabbi Akiva Eiger does not say you can't eat those dough with the raisins that are on the Shabbos, because after all, it was prohibited Friday afternoon, Ben Hashmashot to you, and therefore it becomes prohibited for all Shabbos. So apparently, we don't say, Migo de Ikatsai, On Yom HaShishi, that since it was set aside and non-usable on the sixth day, on Friday, Ben Hashmashot, it becomes Ikatsai into the future. That comes up, let's say, in Sukkot issues as well. It's all seven of discussions. That's what he's saying. Rabbi Akiva Eiger seems to show that we don't say Muktzah Mechmat Yom She'avar, the fact that it wasn't usable on Friday afternoon because of the previous day, because there's something special about Friday, means that we can't, doesn't mean that we can't use it on Shabbos. Even though for other things, let's say, for example, if you have candles burning Friday afternoon, Ben Hashmashot, we do say that Migo de Katsai le Ben Hashmashot, it Katsai le Kula Yoma, that once it was not usable for us on halakhic terms on Friday afternoon, and Ben Hashmashot, therefore can be used all of Shabbos. So why don't we say that here? Because the answer is, because this stuff was only unusable because of the previous day. In other words, the candles when they're burning are unusable because of them, because they are burning. So they're unusable Friday, Ben Hashmashot. But the non-shmur matzah, or the dough with the raisins in it, isn't inherently unusable. It's unusable because of a halachic issue about the Friday day, and therefore we don't apply that to the day come. That's Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Shulchasim Sofer, who was, in fact, the Rabbi Akiva Eiger's son-in-law. They were a year and a half apart in age, and yet the Rabbi Chasim Sofer's second marriage which for all I know was a happy marriage because they had lots and lots of children. They stayed together the whole rest of their lives. So the rest of Chasam Sofer's life, he married a much younger woman. He married the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who was really his, you know, literally a year and a half older than him, and therefore much more of a contemporary than the father-in-law, was in fact his father-in-law as well. So he writes about it that he doesn't accept that reasoning. Now, he says it's true. If I had a whole shein b'sakana, if I had somebody who was ill that needed, you know, food, that happens often. So he says, you could have a whole wheel like that. You could have a reasoning that I'm cooking because maybe I'll encounter a chol shein b'sakana. But he says, but you can't say it about the dough with raisins in it because it's very rare to have a chola, to have somebody who's ill whose specific need is dough with raisins. Meaning, when I'm cooking Friday afternoons in general and I'm using the biblical reasoning, the reasoning of, oh well, maybe guests will come to get around the biblical problem of hachanah, preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat, guests might come, and then if they come, I can say, this is the food that I'm going to give them. But once it's going to be about a chol shein b'sakana, somebody who's ill, I'm going to have to say that the food that I'm preparing, it will be the food that they need. So because Chasam Sofer says, it's odd to think that you're going to have people pop up who need dough with raisins in it. So I'm sorry, I hadn't looked this up until now, but I hear myself talking about this all the time. So if I looked it up, I found it in my Bar-Ilan in a book called Piskei Tshuvot, which is written by a guy who's 2 years older than me, just to prove to you how some people outstrip you in life. And he collects a bunch of tshuvot, a bunch of issues, but he points out, and he gives me the source, that in Tuf Samach Zayin Tziv Chet, in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Pesach, the Ramah reports a custom, and he says it's a custom in Medinos Eilu, which should mean it's the Ashkenazic custom. I just don't remember being the custom in the house that I grew up in, so maybe we just didn't know what we were doing, or maybe, I don't know, but he says the custom is not to eat dried dates and grapes, right? Dates would be prunes and grapes would be rosiny, raisins, big or small. He says, it's a question of minhaga mekomo. He says, we don't have any dried fruits unless we knew that they were dried in a way to be sure that you had no problem with chametz. And then, so how would we do that today or not is not our topic today. I'm going to leave that there. But that's the background to what they're talking about in Rabbi Akiva Eiger and in the Chasam Sofer. But the Chasam Sofer says the reasoning of maybe how are we going to find a chole? Why would we assume we're going to find a chole, an ill person who needs specifically raisins in their bread? But he doesn't bring up the issue of Moktzim Machmas Yom She'avar. So that proves to Rabbi, to the Tzitzeliezer, that there is no such problem. Then he says there's a sefer called Birchos Mayim. Sorry, it's probably Brechos Mayim, Pools of Water, by Reb Moshe Yosef Mordechai Biyuchas, who was one of the Chachamim Yerushalayim. He was a Rishon Lezion. He was a chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, a Sephardic chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. He lived from 1738 to 1806, and the Tzitzeliezer apparently has access to his Svarim. He has a Sefer on Or Chaim Simon Tov Mem Vav, and he says that on the seventh day, when the seventh day is Friday, you can prepare on that day, he says, not only rice for those whose minhag is not to eat it on Pesach. And I remember when I first saw this years ago, I had never known it. I think I was 50 at least. By the time I saw this, I never realized that in Eretz Yisrael, Ashkenazim, when the seventh day of Pesach is a Friday, Ashkenazim will prepare rice, can, if they want to, they don't have to, they can prepare rice to eat on Friday, even though the rice is prohibited to them on Friday. And then he says, the Brechos Mayim says, not only that, you could eat chametz mamish. How can you eat chametz mamish on Shabbos? You can send to the market. If you have a non-Jew who you're friendly with and who you have good enough relations with that they'll give it to you on credit, or you'll set it up ahead of time, whatever it is, but you can send on Shabbos to them. They can send you a bread and you can eat that bread. Why can you eat that bread? Because it's not Pesach anymore. It's the eighth day of Pesach. It's what we call the eighth day of Pesach. In Israel, it's not Pesach. Of course you can eat bread on Pesach. But why wouldn't you say to yourself, so he says explicitly, Lo Amrin and Muktzah Machmazim Shevar, the fact that it was Muktzah to you, that you could not have eaten it on Friday, Benesh Mashog, is irrelevant. So too, in Shut B'nei Binyamin, that whole group of people who decided, you can cook rice on a Friday when Pesach ends Friday night into a Shabbos. Stechemet added that if you're in a place where there's some Sephardim or some Ashkenazim, so then it's even easier to say you can do that, because then you can really say, Ho'el mikla'e le'orchim. that you can really assume that you're gonna, you know, you might have guests who come, because if you have Sephardi friends, and you should have Sephardi friends, it's not only for this reason, but probably for other reasons too. So you have Sephardi friends, they might come over, and they might come over and you can serve them rice. That's another interesting thing. Now, I wouldn't have thought that because that theoretically means that I can cook rice for whatever reason I want to cook rice, but I can cook rice any day of Pesach almost, because I can say, you know, I'm cooking it for my Sephardi friends who might come over. It even seems to imply that I could, let's say I'm having a meal, and I'm having Sephardim at the meal and Ashkenazim at the meal, and I, for whatever reason, chose to, I could cook and serve rice dishes and serve it to them. It seems that, unless it's only for the reason of Hoyim Mekalei Arkim, when I know that I'm going to be able to eat it the next day as well. In any case, that's another example of showing that we don't think Miko de Katsai, because if you're going to tell me you can cook the rice on Friday, which is the seventh day of Pesach, and you have the reason of maybe Sephardi friends will come over as guests and I'll be able to serve them, that gets rid of the biblical problem of Hachana, of preparing from Friday into Shabbat, and then on Shabbat I can eat it, then you're also assuming, we don't say we don't say that the fact that it was unusable on Friday at Medrash Mashot is a problem for me going into Shabbos. So too, Shlomo Kluger and Halef Lecha, Shlomo permitted Knedel to people who eat gebrucks, right? There are people who don't eat gebrucks all Pesach. They don't eat anything that's been dipped in water, even though it was already matzah, it's already been baked, because they're worried that some piece of it might not have been baked, and therefore it'll become leavened. So such people very often will allow themselves to eat gebrucks on the eighth day of Pesach. So the Rosh Shlomo Kluger said, great, so when the eighth day of Pesach is a Shabbos, you are allowed to cook the knedel on Friday afternoon, after you've been there for some shilim, but the point is, even though it's usher to you, you can't eat it. Benes Pashot doesn't affect. Another example, and that's a good, interesting example of Knedel. And then, I don't know if he brings it last, but the Maharsham and Sefer Baruch Hashayim talked about specifically baking and making non-shmur matzah, which was really the question that the original guy had asked, because he was using for Eretz Tavshilin. So now he has a tshuva, the Maharsham and Sefer Baruch Hashayim, who specifically allows baking and preparing matzah for that final Shabbos, even though it's not Mishmura, which is exactly the question that we wanted. Then in brackets, he puts in, he mentions the Sefer Chok Yisrael, too. He says, Lididi Habilti Nishkach Hagon HaTzadik Mohri Velts, who I've seen in a couple of the Tshuvot, was this elder European Rav who had moved to Eretz Yisrael and meets these young Turks of Torah, as it were. So the Mari Velts in this Rav, I think his name was Yisrael Velts, but I forget. But he was a well-established Talmid Chacham of his own, and yet when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he seems to have recognized, I'm not saying they were greater than him, but he acts as if they were much greater than him, and he has these conversations. If you sort of Google, and not Google, but if you Barilan search his name, Velts, Vavav, Ayin Lamed Tzadi, you'll see he has these correspondences with Eliezer, I think also with Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, with Ravad Yosef, and he asks them questions and he accepts their answers, but he has a farm of his own too. So Eliezer, he's now passed away, he's much older than they were, so he's now passed away by the time he's writing this tshuva. He says, but I don't forget him, he's like an important person that I've never forgotten. And he and his sefer had another question about whether you can make an Erev Chatzeros Erev Pesach when Erev Pesach is a Shabbos, so you're going to make it on Friday, but you're going to make it with matzah. The problem is you can't eat matzah because on Erev Pesach, because we have tradition in the Gemara already. This one is a series, like there's a custom to go back all the way to the beginning of Nisan or to a month before Pesach, but this is even just, you know, Erev Pesach is much more established. Can you make an Erev with matzah? Because you're not allowed to eat it. So that's not the exact same kind of a thing, but it's a similar idea, so he mentions it and throws it in. And even those who disagree to this, they don't disagree about the Migo de Katzai, about the Muxa issue. They disagree about whether you're allowed to cook it on Friday. Right? There are those who hold, no, you can't cook on Friday rice, let's say, for Shabbos, because rice is usher to you. You shouldn't be cooking rice on a day that is usher to you. That's not, there's this impression that that's not the Rov HaPoskim, it's not the majority of Poskim, but none of them think that's a problem. So here, this question was about using already prepared matzah for an Erev Tavshilin. It's just not matzah, that's matzah shmura. So there he says it's clear to him that you're allowed to use matzah shmura for the Erev Tavshilin, because even though you can't use it yourself, Banesh Mashot, on Friday afternoon, we don't say this idea of amigo, of that something was connected specifically to the halachos of Friday being the reason you couldn't use it, that would affect our ability to use it as Erev Tavshilin. And that is the first of our tshuvot that we wanted to see today. That was the main one. But there's a brief, I knew that it wasn't going to take us all of our time. There were details there that I probably could have stretched it out, but I didn't want to. I did find another tshuva that's there from the not really from the 23rd of Nisan, but related to 23rd of Nisan, because there's a letter in here that has to do with 23rd of Nisan. It's from the Tzitzit Ezer, volume 13, response 93. The case there seems to be that you had a woman who had converted out of Judaism, whatever that means. That's going to be the question at hand, actually, as to what it means to convert out of Judaism. She converted out of Judaism and joined the Anglican Church. Seems to be a case. It was coming through the Tzitzit Ezer from London. And then she returned to Judaism. She became Jewish again, and she came before a Jewish court. She was very upset about her having converted out, and she said she only converted to the Anglican Church because something got into her. She was crazy. She didn't know what she was doing, but fundamentally, she did it to get married to a guy. She met a guy. She fell in love with him. She wanted to marry him. He was an Anglican. He wouldn't marry unless he converted to Anglicanism, so she did, and now she's very upset. Wants to return to Judaism, never believed. She says she never believed in Christianity and any of that stuff. We don't have any kids. We're already separated for half a year, and I regret the whole thing. Right? Marriage went bad, and she regrets the whole thing. So, of course, right? That's what the Torah says. Move on, Shukla. Of course they took her back, right? But now, problem, well, it seems to be, and this is like 1963, British law wasn't clear that she was allowed to go back, I think. The Anglican Church had a lot of power in Britain at the time, Great Britain at the time. They didn't want to certify that she left that she was leaving their religion and going to the Jewish religion. And so the Beit Din had given a psak on the 23rd of Nisan. I think it's the Beit Din, not the court. I think it's the Beit Din. On the 23rd of Nisan of 1963, Tafshin Chaf Gimel, they say, we certify that she wants, that this woman, the applicant, has returned to Judaism, and she should be officially signed up. I think the law in England was at the time was that you had to sign up for religion. She should be signed in all the religious forms as Jewish. Anglican Church didn't want that, so now they have a court case. The Anglican Church is saying she's not allowed to leave the Anglican Church, and she's not allowed to turn it over for another religion. And so her lawyer has turned to the Titzeliezer, well, turned to the court, and the court is turning, the Beit Din, not the court, the Beit Din is turning to the Titzeliezer. What they don't know is when this Beit Din had said she's returned to Judaism, does that mean that she wasn't Jewish and now she's returned? Right, that's one possibility. Or does it mean she was always Jewish and she's returned, as the phrase, we use the phrase of Choseret B'tshuva. She has repented. We call that a return. So he's turning this into the Ezer, because the lawyer, because the definitional issue will be very important to the court, because if they can argue in court that by Jewish law, she was never not Jewish, and that when we say return, meaning the Anglican Church had fastened upon this phrase, she's returned to Judaism, say, ah, see, she left. She went out of Judaism, and now she's coming back. And the Anglican Church had their argument to say, we don't allow that in England. We don't allow people who have become Anglican to leave Anglicanism, even if they think of it as a return to Judaism. So that's going to be the important issue. So it says, Ra'inu v'chashnu. We saw this, and we were, you know, very anxious about it. We made very sure to write back very quickly. And then he writes, me and my co-judges, Rav Yosef and Rav Yosef Kapach, all of whom have gone to their eternal rewards, Zichit Tzadikim Livrachah. Can you imagine that court? Rav Kapach, who's like a huge translator and made the Rambam and other Arabic Jewish authorities, much more accessible to the world. It was also an important Rav in the Yemenite community. Rav Yosef, it's unbelievable. Anyway. So they said they saw the danger for this Jewish girl, so they made sure to write back very quickly the following. Jews can't get rid of being Jewish. That's the Jewish view. And it's never true that when we say somebody left, what we mean is they left. They're always part of the Jewish religion. Once you're born to a Jewish mother, you're Jewish forever. The Rambam writes that way in the Igeret Haman, the letter to Yemen, was to a group of people in Yemen, who therefore developed this great connection to the Rambam forever, about they had been had an Islam Muslim persecution. That part of the story of Islam is that periodically, for much of history, the Muslims have been good and nice and fine people, and they've treated Jews with relative respect, certainly compared to Christianity, but relative respect, even though it's a religion that they disagree with, and Jews and Muslims have gone along fine. Periodically, every century and a half, you'll have what we today would call, let's say, radical Islam, and they try to make sure that everybody has to convert to Islam. And you have such, the Rambam had such problems with the Almohades in Spain, and that's why his family left Spain and eventually ended up in Egypt. And some of those persecutions hit Yemen, and a bunch of Jews in Yemen converted to Islam, and then were told by some rabbi there that they had lost their right in the world to come forever. They were upset, they write to the Rambam. Rambam writes them back a comforting letter. The Rambam says, you're not Jewish. The conversion has no effect. You shouldn't feel bad. But he also says, and by the way, now that we say that you're still Jewish, don't think even if you're still forced to act like a Muslim, even if you're still forced to pretend to be a Muslim, don't think you can violate the Torah in general. Don't think that you can mechallel Shabbos. You say, well, I'm a Muslim now. One day I'll get back to Judaism. So the Rambam says, no, you can't escape from the Torah. Not you, not your descendants through matrilineal, all of your, you know, all the people born to Jewish women, they're Jews. And every violation of Shabbos, violation of kosher, every violation of anything is a violation, and you can't do it. So you have to the best of your abilities, avoid all violations that you can, and do as many mitzvot as you can, and you'll get punished for them to whatever extent Hashem punishes. So don't think that there's ever such a thing as getting, for example, Yerov ben Nevat is a model of evil in Jewish history. It certainly seems to have left the religion four ways. He set up his whole new religion. So he's going to be punished for the new religion he set up, you know, the Agalim, the metal calves he set up for Jews to worship wherever they were. But he's similarly going to be punished for not keeping the mitzvah of sukkahs, not putting up a sukkah in sukkahs, because once you're Jewish, you're Jewish. So the principle, says to the Ezra, is you're never out. So too, the story of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was somewhere, there was a mumer, there was a guy who was like, you know, had left the religion, and they're sitting around some commonplace, and the owner of the, let's say it's an inn or a hostel, and there's serving a meal, he says, don't give that guy food unless he's going to make a bracha on it. And so the guy says, I don't believe in Judaism, I don't believe in this. And the Vilna Gaon says to him, just because you went crazy and decided that you don't keep mitzvot doesn't mean that they don't apply to you. And therefore, I have to stop here. I'm already over time. But fundamentally, what the Jew says is, and all that and more is proof that Jews never leave. And so this woman, when we say that she's returned, we do not at all mean that she was out and returned. We mean that her experience herself was out, and now she's returned. But we really mean she's returned b'tshuva. She's come back, she's repented and realized that she was wrong for what she did. And therefore, she is and always has been fully Jewish. And therefore, you can, you know, deal with the Anglican Church and all your things. But that's the definition of what we mean by that. So those are two responses today. One, much longer one, discussion about Migo Did Katzai, about what happens Friday afternoon when something that's true of Friday is not true for Shabbos, and how that affects our Shabbos experience of that food, usually is the example. And then the question of, can somebody ever leave Judaism? The answer being no. Have a great day. Thanks to the OU. Thanks to Jeremiah Jacob Brownwich. Thanks to David Hockhauser. Have a great day.